I will. Tomorrow.
Do it now.
It's the middle of the night.
There was a question you used to ask me.
Was there?
You stopped asking it.
What was it?
You used to ask if I was married.
Are you?
No.
Reacher looked up again. Janet Salter stared right back at him. He said, I'll leave tomorrow.
He hung up the phone.
5 minutes to 2 in the morning. 2 hours to go. Chapter 40. 3 hours into the flight, and Plato was getting tense. Unsurprisingly, his life was like a video game. One thing popped up at him after another. Each thing had to be dealt with efficiently and comprehensively, from the most important to the least. Not that even the least important thing was trivial. He spent $1,500 a month on rubber bands alone, just to bind up all the cash that he took to the bank. There were no small problems, and plenty of big ones. And his performance was judged not only on substance, but also on style. Drama was weakness, especially for him. The irony was that he had been large as a child. Until he was 7, he was as big or bigger than anyone else. At 8, he was still fully competitive. At 9, he was in the ballpark. Then he had stopped growing. No one knew why. No one knew if it was genetic or a disease or an environmental factor, maybe mercury or lead or some other heavy metal. Certainly it was not a lack of food or proper care. His parents had always been present and competent. At first they had turned a blind eye. The assumption was that such a thing would correct itself. But it didn't. So first his father had turned away, and then his mother. Now, no one turned away. His cell phone was switched on. Normal rules did not apply to him. It rang, and he answered it. His man on the ground. Some fellow cop had found out too much and had been taken out. Plato didn't care. Collateral damage. Unimportant. Some other guy was sniffing around, too, and would have to be dealt with. An ex-military cop. Plato didn't care about that, either. Unimportant. Not his problem. But then, finally, the big news. The witness was dead. Plato smiled. He said,
You just saved a life.
Then he made a call of his own. Brooklyn, New York. He announced the news. The last obstacle had been removed. South Dakota was now definitively a trouble-free zone. The title was impregnable, absolutely guaranteed. The Russian agreed to wire the money immediately. Plato listened hard and imagined he heard the click of the mouse. He smiled again. A done deal. He closed his phone and looked out his window. Seat 1A, the best on the plane. His plane. He looked down at America spread out below, dark and massive, strings of lights. He checked his watch. 57 more minutes, then, once again, and as always, showtime. Another challenge, another triumph. Reacher went upstairs and found Janet Salter's bedroom. It was at the back of the house, directly above the library. It was a pleasant, fragrant room that smelled of talcum powder and lavender. His bathroom was directly above half of the kitchen. There was a medicine cabinet above the sink. In it was an array of basic toiletry items, plus the box of .38 ammunition, 88 rounds remaining of the original 100. Reacher put the box in his coat pocket and closed the mirror. He went back down the stairs and stepped into the library and stood over Janet Salter and moved her book and one soft arm and took her gun out of her cardigan pocket. It was still fully loaded. It had not been fired. He put it in his own pocket and replaced the book and the arm and stepped away. The cop who had killed the lawyer and the deputy chief and Mrs. Salter sat in his car and stared out the windshield. He was in his designated position on the makeshift perimeter, personally responsible for the eighth of a mile of snow on his left and the eighth of a mile of snow on his right. Not that any escaper would use anything except the road, even in summer. In any season, the terrain was too flat and featureless for concealment. The dogs would run him down in a minute. Going cross-country and hiding in ditches and culverts was strictly for the kind of old black-and-white chain gang movie that gets shown late at night on the miners' satellite channels. Now, these days, any sane fugitive would come straight down the road, strapped to the chassis of an empty delivery truck. Not that there actually was a fugitive. Plato had been clear about that. There were all kinds of voids in the prison architecture. Overhead plenum chambers where ducts branched, underfloor matrixes where pipes split, all kinds of inspection panels, all perfectly safe because none of the voids actually led anywhere, but useful for purposes short of an actual breakout. A sandwich and a bottle to pee in, a guy could hold out 10 or 12 hours, which would be enough. The cop checked his guns. Habit. Instinct. First his official piece in his holster, and then his other piece in his pocket. Loaded. A round in the chamber and 14 more in the magazine. He wouldn't need the 14 in the magazine. Reacher took one last careful tour through Janet Salter's house. He was fairly sure he wouldn't be coming back to it, and there were certain things he needed to fix in his mind. He looked at the front door, the back door, the basement door, the kitchen, the hallway, the library. Janet Salter's position in it and the book on her lap. Somewhere between 5 and 8 minutes, he thought, for her to get as comfortable as she looked, given that she had been starting out from a state of extreme panic. It would have taken her that kind of time to relax, even in the safe and reassuring company of a trusted figure like a town cop. So, allowing a minute's margin for her protective detail to clear the area, someone had been between 6 and 9 minutes late to the roll call up at the prison. Someone would remember. Maybe. If there had been a roll call at all. If the guy had even gone. Reacher zipped his coat and jammed his hat down over his ears and covered it with his hood, put his gloves on, opened the front door, and stepped out once again into the cold. It crowded in on him, battered at him, tormented him, froze him, but he ignored it, an act of will. He closed the door and walked down the driveway and made the turns and headed back toward the station. He stayed vigilant all the way, right up there in the kind of hyper-alert zone that made him feel he could draw and fire 1,000 times faster than any opponent. The kind of zone that made him feel he could mine the ore and smelt the metal and draw the blueprint and cast the parts and build his own gun, all before any opponent got the drop on him. I'm not afraid of death. Death's afraid of me. Fear into aggression. Guilt into aggression.